Hello, I'm David Osman. On behalf of the Independent Research Forum, welcome to this IRF podcast. With me today is David Metzer and Chris Sawinski of ACG Analytics. Our subject for this podcast, the US economic, political, and investment outlook. The Independent Research Forum promotes a wide range of high-quality, independent research and alternative data providers from around the world, both micro and macro. Some are stock pickers, some are sector-specific, some country-specific, many are global, and all are investment-related. This year, arguably more than most, the global investment outlook hinges on developments in the United States of America. Whether it be the uncertain strength of the US economy, the outlook for US interest rates, the prospects for the US dollar, or the outcome of the US presidential and congressional elections in November, global asset allocators will have to keep a keen eye on the United States every step of the way. I'm therefore very pleased that we are joined today by David Metzer and Chris Sawinski of ACG Analytics. ACG Analytics is an independent research firm that translates public policy for investment fund managers and analysts. Their research focuses on specific policy issues and actions in the United States, the European Union, Asia, and Latin America. They anticipate how government policies in key markets may impact on investor strategies. David Metzner is a founder and managing partner of ACG Analytics. David is deeply involved in the US policy space on the administration, congressional, and NGO levels. He has consulted for over 25 years on the federal nature of the American government and the interplay between the 50 US states, Washington, D.C., and foreign governments in the development of public policy. Chris Sawinski provides strategic analysis on a range of policy issues, including international trade, financial services, tax, energy, and Latin America. David, Chris, welcome. Let's start with a short introduction to the advisory service that is provided by ACG Analytics.
Thank you, David. This is David Metzner. We are actually doing this from London because we have a great group of investors over here that understand that to truly understand what's happening in North America, you need to go beyond the FT and Bloomberg. Our focus is macro analysis, rates. We have a view that, for instance, this year on what the Fed is going to do. We've been consistent in that view. Distressed, which we respect a lot. We look at help people understand individual equities. For instance, is the U.S. government going to provide support through the Inflation Reduction Act to certain companies or not? If you have a poor balance sheet, will you qualify for U.S. government funding, particularly in the energy space? And of course, one of our favorite topics that we're doing a lot of work on, Chris and I, here in London, is our merger ARB clients. Obviously, with the Biden administration, it's become a much more challenging area to understand what's happening at the FTC and the Justice Department. So with that, David, thank you for having us here. We look forward to having a discussion.
To start with the economic outlook, how do you see the U.S. economy shaping up ahead of the U.S. presidential and congressional elections in early November?
Well, thanks, David. This is Chris Sawinski. I think that the United States is in a really interesting place, right? Because on its face, the U.S. economy continues to chug along, looks relatively strong by almost all metrics. But the American consumer and voter does not really feel that. And you're seeing that with the poor marks that President Biden's getting on the economy. And of course, the economy is typically the most important issue when it comes to U.S. elections. So, you know, some of that is actually quite perceived through your party affiliation. So Republicans, by and large, feel like the economy is doing quite poorly, while the Democrats, by and large, feel like the economy is doing quite well. Biden himself has dubbed this Bidenomics and is choosing to campaign on the issue, despite the fact that, you know, much of the U.S. electorate is not really feeling that. And I think that's borne out by a number of different issues. David, I think, here can talk about why people look longingly into the Trump administration and why, you know, he's polling so well as we head into the 2024 election, despite all of the crazy things that he says. And I think that he'll go into that in a second. But, you know, on its face, I think that last mile inflation is proving to be a bit sticky. There was a ton of market exuberance as to the path for rate cuts this year. 1.5 or 6 rate cuts were expected, and now we've, of course, settled on 3. Powell last week, I think, gave investors a lot to cheer for when his comments, particularly around the effect of unemployment in the labor market on the path of rate cuts, gave people a lot to look forward to. So you're seeing some of that exuberance come back into the market. I think that we're pretty we've been consistent from the start as to, you know, 3 rate cuts this year. And I think that unless something really breaks in the labor market, that's probably all you'll see. But David, I mean, you've talked a bit about why people look longingly at Trump, and it is very different now than when it was in 2019, say, before the COVID pandemic.
Look, people every day remember in the States the pre-COVID era of low inflation. Okay. When an American consumer goes to the grocery store, people are talking about how the basket is much less filled. So they remember the pre-inflation era. Americans think it's their God-given right to have their 3% or less mortgage. Obviously, mortgages are at a 20-year high with the Fed's hiking. They remember an era of no wars. So yes, and lower petroleum prices at the gas pump. Yes, Trump is loud, obnoxious. But to quote Jamie Dimon of J.P. Morgan, he said, you know, Trump had a few things right. He had it right on China. He had it right on European defense. He had it right on energy policy. So there is a nostalgia for a period of when Americans could just be left alone and enjoy their families. And that's pushing the Trump voter to come this cycle.
And despite all that, you see the U.S. economy, by all measures, continues to surprise. And I think that part of that and part of why inflation is seemingly so sticky, particularly in the last mile, as I previously said, is because you've had so much spending at the federal level. And you've got, just to name a couple, you've got the Inflation Reduction Act, the Bipartisan Infrastructure Law, and you've got the CHIPS Act. And that's all part of this new American, you know, protectionist industrial policy, which I would argue is increasingly mirrored around the world. But that money is slow to trickle into the U.S. economy. And that's the reason why there's a certain element of inflation, including the geopolitical conflicts, and also it's supportive of growth for probably the remainder of this year.
So if the presidential election remains a rerun of Biden versus Trump, what will be the most important policy differences on offer? And what is the probability that Biden will win again?
Why don't we answer the analysis of Biden v. Trump, and then we'll talk about policy differences, particularly for your British clients. This is not a national election. We have an electoral college where each state by population gets a certain number of votes. We have a situation. I used to come to London when Trump won, and I'd give speeches about why Trump won because people were completely shocked. And my first slide was a slide in the United States, and it showed that Trump won over 90% of the counties in the United States. So the map was completely red, okay, except for the coasts and a couple big urban areas. There were 7 what we call battleground states that will determine this election: Michigan, Pennsylvania, Florida, Arizona, Nevada, Wisconsin, and Minnesota. Trump won when he first ran Michigan, and he lost it narrowly last time. I'm going to call Michigan as a possible win for Trump due to the fact that the Muslim vote is very dissatisfied with Biden over Gaza, and the auto workers are not happy with Biden's subsidization of electric vehicles. Pennsylvania, Trump won and then narrowly lost. He lost it because he didn't carry certain rural counties. Rural counties are very important. They generally tend to be less educated and tend to be a little bit more Republican. Biden seems to be leading in recent polls in Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania has two major urban areas, Philadelphia and Pittsburgh, with a very farm belt, more rural area in between. Moving down to Georgia, Trump narrowly lost that by 15,000 votes. There were two African Americans on the ticket, one for governor, one for senator. The governor lost. The governor is a Republican. The senator won. I think turnout will be less there, and Trump will win that. Arizona, a little bit more difficult. Democratic governor, traditional Republican state. Also challenging in the sense that it has a divisive Senate candidate on the ticket, a seemingly popular left of center. The traditional moderate Republican voter doesn't seem motivated. However, the unknown is the migration border crisis, which Arizona is facing, is a major, major issue, and Biden could be punished on this election on that issue. Nevada, not a lot of electoral votes. Las Vegas is where the population is, major unionized city in the culinary workers of America. We're going to give Trump did not carry that either time, and I'm going to give that to Biden. Moving on to Wisconsin and Minnesota, typical Wisconsin becoming more Republican, Minnesota less so, Democratic governors. So I'm going to give that to Biden. Under this scenario, Biden either wins narrowly or it could be tied. So moving on to policies, look, the biggest difference is Biden's green agenda and Trump's embracing of oil and gas, number one. Well, I think we'll see more pipelines, continued support for the oil and gas industry. You'll see, if Biden's reelected, a more of a transatlantic relationship. You know, with Trump, you're going to see more of an economic nationalism, criticism of NATO, criticism of European spending. Really more of what you heard in Trump's first term. China, I think Trump and Biden are aligned. Biden is basically following Trump's policy. Chris, did I miss anything?
Well, I mean, for our M&A guys, you know, I think antitrust frees up quite a bit under Trump as opposed to Biden. And then I'd say one of the main policy areas that you'll see, a marked difference would be the tax regime, because you've got a lot of, you know, the Trump tax cuts that we would expect a Republican administration to push for, whereas Biden probably much less so, including the corporate rate. That'd probably be two things. On the geopolitics, I think you'll probably see a marked difference in both approaches to Russia, Ukraine as well, because as you know, the Biden administration is quite frustrated with Republicans in Congress and their lack of, well, I should say a subsect of the Republicans in Congress whom do not want to provide additional aid to Ukraine. I think that, you know, a lot of that's driven from former President Biden or former President Trump. And I think that in a second term, former President Trump would probably look to get Zelensky and the Russians to the negotiating table and try to end that conflict relatively quickly. So you got, you know, different approaches there. I think on the trade agenda, generally speaking, you already addressed China. I agree. I think that they continue to target China, high tech sectors, and probably, you know, broader tariffs across the board. I think that both presidents as well, I know you asked about the differences, but I think that both presidents are going to have to confront this Chinese circumvention of U.S. restrictions through investment in Mexico. There's, after the approval of the USMCA, you've got all these foreign companies looking to get under the USMCA umbrella, and Chinese investment in Mexico has skyrocketed, and both parties have identified this as an issue. So I think both of them are going to have to approach that. Although I think that ultimately it's still a relatively benign scenario because we're quite bullish Mexico still. So those would be some of the issues, David, that I think you'll see both similarities and differences.
Would there be any significant difference on fiscal policy, the overall fiscal stance over the course of the 4-year term of office?
Well, number one, I mean, Republicans used to be the party of austerity. That seems to have gone out the window during the previous Trump term. And of course, we've seen unbelievable spending post-COVID with the Infrastructure Act, you know, multi-trillions of dollars, Inflation Reduction Act. I think my message here is that the U.S. is really, in 2025, is going to face a fiscal reckoning. The debt is, I think it took 100 years to get $6 billion and a few years to get to $30 trillion. So we've got a real challenge there. Presidents are going to have to deal with it. It's a difficult challenge. The Trump tax cuts are expiring. There'll be a major debate about those, which ones to keep, which ones not. But the U.S. it's going to be very difficult to do. It is in need of some revenue enhancement. There is no doubt about that. You know, and I do see a major, major national debate when it costs as much to service the national debt as it does to fund the U.S. Defense Department. Even conservative national security hawks take notice.
So if for any reason Biden or Trump does not run, who are the most likely alternative candidates for the Democrats and for the Republicans?
Well, first of all, I like to say we don't expect them not to run. Okay, now somebody could get ill, get decapacitated. They both have secured their nominations. When I'm asked this question, I have a joke that Air Force One is very difficult to give up. Biden spent his life running for president, and now that he has it, he is not going to give it up. Trump feels obvious that the 2020 election was stolen from him. He never stops talking about that. Now, let's look at both are not in perfect health. Clearly, if Biden goes to his convention and says, and he feels for some medical reason that he can't run, he could release his delegates and they could choose someone else. A likely candidate, you hear a lot about Gavin Newsom in California. He's got a lot of baggage, good head of hair. And then you have the governor of Kentucky, who is Beshear, who is the son of a former governor, and he's won in a very red state, Republican state. I happen to like Beshear better. I think he's more interesting and more moderate, more centrist, which I think is really where the United States is. Trump, less talk on the Republican side. We don't know who Trump's running mate is. There's Senator Tim Scott, who ran for president, an African-American from South Carolina. I don't think it's going to be Nikki Haley, who was the former governor of South Carolina and Trump's ambassador to the UN. Trump doesn't usually pick people that are hypercritical of him on a campaign. So it's less clear on that side. And again, it depends when you step down what the process is. If you do it before your convention, you could release your delegates and sort of an old-fashioned American, you know, picking a senator in a smoke-filled room. Like the difference between, that's how John Kennedy was picked, actually. And I think that would produce a lot of cynicism by the American electorate and help the other party.
I would just add, David, on that, you know, if you're looking at the court cases to be some sort of prohibitive factor for Trump running, right now the cases look relatively benign. And so, again, as we underscored at the start, we don't see any other alternative to a Biden-Trump rematch, despite however much the Republican, well, I should say the American electorate do not want it.
What is the probability that the next president, whoever wins, will have to deal with a split Congress? Or could one party sweep the board, winning majorities in both the House of Representatives and the Senate?
Great question. The answer to that is it's likely that that does not happen. That the Senate, which is narrowly by two votes in the hands of the Democrats, flips Republican. Why? Because there are many more Democratic senators up for re-election this year than in the past. And so there's already some resignations. Joe Manchin of West Virginia, moderate, is not running again. Former governor is running. And so you see an opportunity that the Senate flips. The House now, there's a one-seat majority for the Republicans in the House with the recent resignation of my friend Mike Alger, who was chairman of the Special Committee on the Chinese Communist Party. The party, the Democrats in the House have much more money to put to work here, and it just seems that with some redistricting and some court cases that the Dems, so it will be split. That will prevent massive $1 trillion spending programs that Biden was able to do. So Our call is right now, our call is, you know, for a split Congress. Chris?
Yeah, I think that the way that that fits in, you've got basically a Biden win, right? And I think we're placing a 55% odds on that, David, per your previous question. And then you've got a Republican Senate and a Democratic House. And look, you talk to people in the Republican Party in the House, they feel very differently than that. But despite that, you know, there's idiosyncratic reasons why the House is no longer as correlated with the top of the ticket. So, we think that the Democrats have an edge there.
What are likely to be the most important economic and geopolitical challenges that the USA faces in 2025 and beyond?
Clearly, the structural deficit is the greatest economic challenge, number one. Number two is, I mean, geopolitically, it also depends who the president is. Biden is as transatlanticist, will work with Europe to contain Russia. His original desire was for a rapprochement with Iran, and he's skeptical of the leadership of Egypt and Saudi Arabia. Trump's the opposite. Trump is going to be much more economic and nationalist, and was very comfortable working with Sisi, MBS, and had a maximum pressure containment philosophy against Iran, maximum sanctions. Where they overlap is that Biden has largely followed Trump's policy on China. I mean, China will continue to be a strategic competitor of not only the United States, but of Europe and Great Britain. And you'll look, I think, with both of these leaders for some level of coordination vis-a-vis China.
Well, I also think, David, that in this divided Congress scenario that we laid out, you know, we talk about it here and with clients that if President Biden had a Republican Senate right now, or I should say after his win in 2020, he would have had a much better time. Instead, he's been forced to acquiesce to a lot of the progressive Democratic demands rather than move forward with pragmatic policymaking and deal making, which would have happened if the Republicans had control of the Senate. So I think that if you look forward, there are challenges with a divided Congress, whoever wins, but there's also theoretically some opportunity. I think particularly if Biden wins and Republicans take the Senate, as we said, and Democrats take the House, you've got an opportunity to still legislate. But there are always challenges with the divided government scenario. And then finally, look, I think that with the MAGA movement and in President Trump, I think that there are certainly question marks surrounding will the Republican Party accept a loss if President Trump is to lose in the general election, or how will they react? So I think you certainly have to keep an eye on social instability. Will there be a repeat of January 6th? I don't know. But I would say that it's certainly not going to be a stress-free evening or subsequent days.
From an investment standpoint, is now a good time to invest in U.S. equities, U.S. bonds, and the U.S. dollar?
I think it's always a good time. When you look at the world and you look at the United States has certain inherent reasons to invest, at least as a safe haven. You know, we've had a very strong consumer demand, which is softening a little bit. Credit card delinquencies are up. North America has 400 million people in a duty-free arrangement. We have a flexible labor force, less strained than some in Europe. We have very cheap natural gas, what propels every factory that you need. We have judges that will enforce a contract, against someone that cheats you. There's all the reasons that you need to have some of your money, whether you're a corporation or a wealthy individual. You want North American exposure, without a doubt. And its safe haven status, I think, particularly with what's going on in the world, will help keep the dollar strong and keep U.S. companies in a very competitive position.
I think it's pretty clear as well that there is an element of rate differentials with the Fed and, in particular, some of these emerging markets, who are ahead of the U.S. when it comes to an easing cycle. And if you do believe that the Fed will do three this year, I think there's an element of that, and probably, as David said, safe haven status for the dollar. Look, I think the geopolitical tensions are going to continue no matter who wins the presidency. So it's hard to think that there won't be much volatility. So I think, as we've said before, there are some trades, of course, that are affiliated with whomever wins, whether it be, you know, something as clear as defense stocks for a Trump administration, or, you know, if you look at the way that energy is played, oil and gas have actually done better under a Democrat because of, you know, what they consider to be punitive policies to the industry. So there's many ways you can take a look at it. But yeah, the United States, I still think you have to have exposure.
David, Chris, thank you for this most interesting insight into the service that is provided by ACG Analytics. With more time, it'd be interesting to discuss your global insight coverage, especially your analysis of the outlook for China and Latin America, where Argentina and Venezuela are of particular interest at the current time. It would also be interesting to hear more about your thoughts on the prospects for Europe. The Independent Research Forum is offering a brief trial to the ACG Analytics service and can provide details of how to subscribe to the full service. More information is available on request from the Independent Research Forum. Many thanks for listening to this IRF podcast with David Metzner and Chris Zorinsky of ACG Analytics.